Welcome back to another episode of the Lookout Podcast. I'm joined by Lookout Grace. Grace, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing good. I'm going to do take two since I didn't hit play, but yeah. You said you went for a run today with your dog?
Yeah. His name's Selway. We went 4 miles. Oh, and
great name.
Thank you.
You said he's working off the winter weight right now?
Yeah. Usually he's way ahead of me chasing chipmunks everywhere, but now he's a few steps behind me breathing really heavy and working a little bit harder.
Sounds more like my how I sound when I'm breathing. Working a little harder, going a little slower. But the problem is I ran college and then I got in really good shape to smoke jump. So every time I go for a run, my brain resets, especially if it's like an outdoor run after the winter, my brain resets to like when I was in really good shape. So my pace, I start off and I'm running like somewhere probably, not super fast, more like 6-minute, 7-minute pace. But then I get about a quarter mile in and I'm just like, holy cow. Like my legs are screaming, my lungs are screaming, you know?
Yeah. Definitely if you take some time off, it takes a while to get back into it, but it's worth it.
It is, yeah. And I think you always kind of have that like kind of higher baseline. It takes a little bit to get back to it, but it's still kind of there, you know? Like that gear, I guess.
Yeah, it never goes away entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you run in high school then?
Yeah, in college.
In college too?
Yeah.
Oh, where at?
MSU Northern in Havre.
Oh, yeah,
it's just a small little NAIA college.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun and it was a great opportunity to continue to run.
Absolutely, yeah. And get some a different terrain of Montana, right? Like a different area, because that's a little more flat up there that way, right?
Yeah, it's flat and windy and cold.
It gets real cold up there, right?
Yeah.
That's technically on the High Line, isn't it?
Yeah. It's about 2 miles from, 2 hours from Great Falls.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not too far away. I've been up and around the area, but not like too ever. It's been on the to-do list because there's a lot of history and stuff there, right?
Yeah, there's a nice little. I don't know if it's a mountain range, but they call it the Bear's Paw Mountains, and they're like little small rolling hills, and they're really unique.
Oh,
so
cool.
It would be worth it to go up there and check those out.
Check those out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, make a. Well, I had a motorcycle. Well, I still got it. I just don't really ride it anymore. But it was on like my to-do list. Was me and my brother were going to go up and do a ride up on the High Line and just to check it out because I'd never really spent any time up there. Just kind of want to cross it. Like we played Shelby in football. Did you ever go Shelby?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go up there. And the way it was is there was like our pre-conference games. So we had three of them at the time. And I don't know if high school still do that. But, for instance, like my freshman year, they would come to us, and then my sophomore year we go to them, and then I think I got that order wrong, but anyway, so you know, every other year we go up there, and it felt, I mean, as a high school kid, especially as a freshman, it felt like we were traveling like a long ways, you know?
Yeah, being there, because I grew up in Missoula, and then I kind of overlooked how great Missoula was, and then going somewhere with completely different terrain made me realize how lucky I was to grow up in a place like this and how much I missed it.
Yeah, and how much that wind can drive you bananas.
Yeah, I think in February, my freshman year, it was -50 for like the whole month and you like couldn't go outside.
It's just brutal, yeah, because you just can't do anything. And then it's probably windy the whole time too, like with the wind chill.
Yeah.
Isn't there like an underground part of Havre?
Yeah, there's Havre beneath the streets.
Oh, yeah.
You can go take a tour of all these old like restaurants and just like saloons that they had. And it's pretty cool.
That's what I heard. Yeah, because didn't like the town burn down one time and it was like in the winter. So they just like boarded up the basements or something to keep things going. That's
a
story I heard.
Yeah, I think so. And then they built it back up, but they kept like maybe illegal activities going on beneath the streets.
Maybe some speakeasies or something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, that's Butte had a little bit of that going on too. Being from Whitehall, you know, always was fascinated with the Butte history, you know, and being the richest hill on earth, you know, there for a while, maybe still is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think they had uncovered speakeasy in Butte like not even that long ago, which is kind of cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, you've been to Butte a few times, huh?
Yeah, and I actually just read the story of Mary McLean.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not familiar. Tell me.
She grew up in Butte, and I think it was early 1900s, and she wrote this memoir about herself, and it was just very forward for a woman at the time to write, like some of the thoughts that she puts down, and so they say it kind of changed the way that
people like viewed.
Yeah, like it was like a early feminism.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, from Montana.
Yeah.
And yeah, she kind of did what no one had done.
Yeah, yeah.
Before.
Kind of, kind of a little breakthrough kind of deal, you know, like sharing the norms kind of.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of she's really bold in in her writing, but
cool.
Yeah, it's worth a read.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of cool too, because as much like you probably do, like I know I do when I'm reading a book, I try to put myself in the writer's shoes a little bit, especially mm-hmm. something like that. Or like it's hard. It's super hard because I couldn't imagine like the restrictions she had. You know, like I'm sure as she was writing, it was going through her head that like I'm gonna get some blowback on this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It takes a lot of bravery, you know, and that's sounds like a tough lady.
Yeah.
And she was in Butte, huh?
Yeah. And she captures the landscape really well and kind of compares it to like the mental landscape.
Oh. Really, yeah, kind of tough and jagged and rugged and
yeah.
all the things.
Yeah.
Unforgiving, maybe.
Yeah. Just kind of, yeah, the impact growing up in, like at the time, Butte was kind of, you know, smaller population, just growing
tough
up
town.
Yeah, in a town like that, at a time like that, the impact it might have on you.
Yeah, and then maybe that made her like a harder person too, you know, like because mm-hmm. it's, you know, pretty hard town. Still I mean, I would say most of my buddies that are from Butte are pretty tough. They're a little more but I don't know, at the same point, right, like there's two edges to the sword, where it's like they're, most of my buddies from Butte are super tough and maybe a little outspoken, some of them, not all of them, but then they're also the other side, is they're like, once you're like buddies with them, they're like the best friends you could ever have in your life.
Yeah.
Like some of my best buddies, you know, from there, and like, yeah, just the bond that you get with a person like that, who's like super tough, but also like super caring at the same time, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, where we grow up, the landscape definitely kind of shapes you in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah, because our ancestors had to survive some pretty tough times being in Montana, you know?
Yeah.
And like, because my other ancestry is Nez Perce, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's a little resiliency there too, I think, that I get from that maybe. But, I think it's within us all, right? Because I think if you go back far enough, we're all tribal folks. That's kind of a thread I keep repeating on my podcast, but.
Yeah.
So I think we all kind of have that built into us. You
know? Yeah.
What year did you say that book was? Do you remember?
I think early 1900s.
Oh, cool.
I just read it for a class, and we also read A River Runs Through It, and we kind of compared, like, the impact that the land had on their writing.
Yeah, right, mm-hmm. Yeah, totally, because, yeah, Norm MacLean was, like, big on that, like, the River Runs Through It's all about, you know, fishing and this somewhat of an obsession, I would say, I guess, with fishing. I mean, anyone who reads it, and even if you're not that outdoorsy, I think you want to be more outdoorsy, mm-hmm. you know, you want to fish more. Like, I already fish, but it makes me want to, like, even just talking about it, I'm just, like, thinking about, like, the Blackfoot River and, you know, Clark Fork and stuff and the Bitterroot. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Weather's nice, and I, you know, want to get out there and, you know, cast the line. I'm more whip the water. I'm not very good. Do you fish?
Sometimes I got really into fly fishing after reading A River Runs Through It.
Yeah.
And then I didn't know anything about, like, the right time of year to fish, so I would, when I worked at the West Fork, I would just go down in May after work every night and try and catch stuff, but I think it was the wrong time.
It was a little high.
Yeah. So I never caught anything, and then one day in, I think it was July, I was fishing on a creek up by Sealy, and I actually got a bite, and I didn't like the feeling that I got when I got the bite. I realized I just kind of liked being on the river.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, actually catching them.
No, yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I really get it because I don't catch very many fish on a fly rod. So,
yeah.
It's, that's why I really enjoy fly fishing. For me, it was like the first time I caught a fish on a fly rod there. It was a 5-weight. So, it felt like I, you know, had like a tuna on. I mean, I had this, like, it wasn't even that big of a brown, but he was fighting really good. And I was like, holy cow, you know, and they, like, one of the sayings is the tug is the drug, you know, because it really tugs hard on the line. But, like you said, like, there's a, being out in nature, and it's so peaceful and quiet, and it's a cool exercise, you know, like getting your line out there and, like, you know, trying to do a double haul or something, you know, to get your line out there a little farther. Like, it's a cool activity.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's this guy I know, and he's actually, he's practicing fly fishing, but without the hooks.
Oh.
And I'm not sure entirely how that works, but that might be something I'm more interested in.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Shoot, you probably get really good at it, though. You'd be a really good caster if you just were out there doing it a bunch. You know? Yeah, my brother, when he taught me, he tied just a little piece of tissue just so you could see something to see at the end of your line. And he had put a bucket out there and had me, you know, cast for the bucket. And even now, like, I'll still, if we're getting together, we have a family cabin up on the Missouri, right where the Dearborn comes in. So, like, if we're getting together for a family trip and I haven't been in the water in a while, I'll get that bucket out again and have him just coach me up a little bit before I get back out there.
Yeah.
But I skipped topics before. I'll let you finish about the two comparisons between the books. Was it mostly, like you said, just more the influence of nature, or is there something else there, I guess?
Oh, no, I think that pretty much sums it up. Yeah, how the region in which we grew up kind of shapes who you are and how you present yourself to the world.
Yeah, yeah, and probably your writing styles, I imagine, too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The space is reflected in what you write, for sure.
Yeah, totally. Oh, that's very cool. And there's a gift to it, right? Like, I even have sometimes on this being able to express what I'm thinking or what I'm... like trying to relay a feeling that I get from the outdoors. I have a little trouble with it because I'm not that poetic. But with writing, you know, because I've read Norm MacLean's books, and they're so, like, detailed, like little details, and the verbiage, it, you know, really paints that picture. So, like, it feels almost like I'm daydreaming as I'm reading through the pages because my imagination is painting the words, you know, and I don't have that ability when I speak, and I'm working on that part.
Yeah, it definitely takes practice, but I think, you know, everyone can definitely get there.
I think so too, like you said, and more reading, you know, like I try to do more reading. I think that if I'm reading a book that is really like thought-provoking, I think it really helps and has a decent vocabulary, I think it definitely translates to this.
Oh, yeah, every time that I sit down to write, I always read a page of poetry first, and I found that really kind of opens up my thought process a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good call. Man. So do you write when you're in the tower?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it gets hard because, like, I like certain conditions when I write. I don't like it to be too hot or too cold. And
I can see that.
There's also the problem with power, like trying to save, you know, power for which electronic you want to use or prioritize.
Does it run on solar up there?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the solar battery that you got charged up, and depending on the weather, you're not getting as much juice, maybe.
Yeah, and my tower didn't have, like, a built-in radio. Like, all we had were the handheld radios.
Oh.
So I always had to put my radios before my laptop, but yeah. I did get quite a bit of writing done, which was
good.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm picturing you, like, at, you know, computer on the Allodade, hat backwards, just, like, cruising through and writing some stuff.
Yeah, it was fun, and when I was up there, I was like, wow, this is really good, and then I got back and I read it, and I was like, oh, like, this needs some editing.
Like, they're gonna go the other way with it, like, man, this is really good.
Yeah, but I was very confident in it, and then but it's just the first draft. So.
Yeah, totally. And then having someone else read, I think, is important because even like when I put a video out or a podcast out, we're our own worst critics. You know, like I'll hear myself say something or mumble something, and I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
So I start getting on myself. I'm like, oh, that was dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's just human. I think it's the humans in us. You know, to be more critical.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes you try to be better, I guess. Right?
Yeah, like it makes revision or the next podcast, you'll be mindful of that, right?
Yeah, I think at the beginning I was overthinking it more than just like having this conversation, you know, with like two people who love the outdoors, me and you, you know, and pretty sure everyone I have, you know, is an outdoorsy person, so.
Yeah.
Are you working on a book? Is there a project or are you just kind of letting your...
I'm working on a memoir about my first season at the Tower. And it's going to be like half my memoir. And then I have my resident mountain goat. So I'm going to study him, and I'm going to try and write like a fictional account of his life.
Very cool.
And kind of braid them together.
Yeah. That is all. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah. And I guess for folks who haven't heard the last podcast, because this is actually Grace's second time on my podcast. The first time was with Kat and Billy, and we did just a cool lookout, you know, nerds podcast. And so then me and Grace talked afterwards about doing a solo one about your first time being a lookout. And how long did you know? I know Reen kind of helped stoke the fire. Did you want to be a lookout before you met Reen?
No, I think, I originally wanted to be on a trails crew.
Oh, yeah.
And when I applied, the only thing that called me back was fire.
Oh.
And so I was like, okay, I'll do that, and then maybe I'll get on a trails crew. And then we would always, the fire crew would help open up the lookouts. Yeah. And we opened up Hell's Half, and I saw, it was Carla at the time. She made us nachos and she had a dog.
Oh,
and
cool.
She started a fire, and I just saw like a glimpse of the lookout life, and I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah. So unique. I mean, it's so rare. Like, there's not too many of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I thought it would be, I thought it would take a lot longer to like get a lookout job or land the position, but yeah, it didn't take as long as I thought.
When you when you were like, all right, I'm doing this, and sent the apps out, did you everywhere, like any lookout position, or were you kind of picky of where you wanted to be?
I sent them out everywhere, but I was hoping to get something in Idaho or Montana.
Yeah.
I had my fingers crossed for the Bitterroot, but at the first call I got was the Payette, and I was like, should I hold out and see if like a Montana tower calls or maybe a Bitterroot, but yeah. I just like was like, no, I'm just going to do it. And
I think so. Yeah, kind of, I know that feeling, like, because it's similar with smoke jumping. You know, I applied everywhere, and then I was going to be picky, and it worked out for me that it kind of picked me, because I think it was the last person hired in 2013. So
yeah,
had one option, and I'm glad.
Yeah.
Because it worked out good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, I think wherever you end up, you'll make the best out of it. You'll be fine wherever you go. But
totally. Did you do some research before? Like, did you look up pictures and stuff?
Yeah. The phone call was my FMO let me know that it was a hiking tower, which was on my checklist, and that it was above 7,000 feet, was also on my checklist.
Yes.
And that you could bring dogs. And
huge.
So since it met all those requirements, I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's perfect. What was the elevation? Yeah,
8,400.
That is up there.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow! Did you run up there when like training runs up there?
Yeah. It was always nice leaving, because I was going downhill at the start and then turning around to come back up. I walked a lot.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah. That's up there. Holy cow!
Yeah, it's rocky, but I think it. I don't know. I think it helped with my running, because higher elevation.
All the Olympic long distance runners try to train at higher elevation, right?
Yeah, but my pace was never fast, because it's a rocky trail. And
I'm the first time I summited a mountain was Manhead, just outside of Whitehall, and you know that's where I'm from. But I in my head I'm like, I'm just gonna run up this thing, because I was running track at the time, and I was, you know, sprinter, but I still, like, you know, we did a lot of the mid-distance training to, you know, so we could, like, run the 200 meter faster and just be in better shape. So, and we do some long run days and stuff. So I felt pretty good. And I want to say, maybe just shy of that 8,000 feet mark, I could start feeling the thinness of the air.
Yeah.
You know? And then I got, you know, 9, I think it's a little shy of 10. I think it's, or maybe Manhead's right at 10. I can't remember exactly the elevation, but. Yeah, I was sucking oxygen at that elevation. Oh, yeah. Way worse than I expected.
Yeah, like when they dropped me off the first day, I had to carry all my stuff up the stairs. Like, my tower is like 30 feet up on the long legs, and just walking up the stairs, like, I was out of breath. Like,
30 feet up too. That's kind of, is it like kind of two flights then?
Yeah.
Oh, that's that's a lot.
Yeah.
And they're kind of narrow, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a little more cumbersome carrying stuff up the stairs.
Yeah, but yeah, it felt weird. Like, I was like, am I this out of shape?
Yeah. It'll make you feel like that for sure. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. I know, I felt like I had asthma. I was like, oh my, like,
yeah.
If I had this my whole life.
Yeah.
It was brutal. Mm-hmm. So 30 feet up, are you like in a good storm? Is that thing moving quite a bit?
Yeah. Especially when the wind goes, at first it was kind of scary, because I was like, this is an old building. Like, is it going to fall over? But it, I mean, it didn't. It stayed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the
That would be the fear for me too.
Yeah.
Like one big gust. I'm like, am I going down?
Yeah, and just like when the lightning starts going, like you feel like you're just so prominent.
Yeah.
It's like it's gonna hit me. Yeah.
Yeah, just so exposed up there, right? Mm-hmm. Did you and you had the insulator stool to stand mm-hmm. on, or
oh good? Yeah, I actually had two. I had a very like a small one and then a big one. So I trained my dog Selway to sit on the smaller one,
yes.
and then I'd sit on the bigger one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, great name, by the way, Selway. That's a really good name.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's, and that's smart. Good, smart dog, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I hear people having unfortunate accidents for, you know, not being on the insulators. Like, I heard a recent story of lookouts. I wish I could remember who told me this, but the bed had insulators on it, I think.
Oh.
So there was a couple, and they were in bed during the storm at night, you know, and their friend was on the floor, and the tower got struck, which isn't out of the normal, you know, out of the ordinary. And then I think he got the friend. So, like, they woke up at some point and realized that he'd been struck and wasn't with them anymore. He'd passed away.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Yeah, the lightning strike had killed him, I think, is what they, you know, figured wow. it was. I was like, whoa. I mean, that... makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of power coming through the, and I think it, then I want to say they said it ran through the stove or something, and he was like, the friend was like sleeping, touching the stove or something.
Yeah, that's so scary.
It is. Holy cow. The danger is real for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Yeah. And I think sometimes when you're up there, like my first storm was really scary, but as the season went on, I was like, kind of like,
just like sipping tea on your stool. Just like,
yeah. And like, but I would get off the stool and like walk around. So yeah, I think you kind of become desensitized maybe to the danger.
I bet.
And you're just like, yeah, you're just doing your thing. But it's important, I think, to stay alert and stay on your
stool. Yeah,
when
things are getting close, yeah. Because mm-hmm. holy cow, I've had some close calls on fire. And you know, and you probably had this in the tower. Did you have it where like it was so close? Well, did you have the tower get struck while you were in there?
No, but there was this pole, I think, where an old outhouse was that got struck.
Really?
And yeah, that was cool.
I bet. Holy cow. Yeah, sparks and everything. And jeez, mm-hmm. probably so loud, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was scary. I was... Well, sorry. You were going to tell a story.
No, go ahead. I got mine in the back of my brain. Keep
okay.
going.
I had just hiked up from my day off, and like the storm was rolling in, and it probably struck that post like 10 minutes after I got to the tower.
Whoa.
Which, I mean... I was there in plenty of time, but still, it was kind of scary.
Oh, that's still kind of close. Yeah. Did you see it, like, rolling in as you were coming up?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it was, like, blue skies, and then I got a mile up, and it was suddenly, like, overcast, and, like, the winds were picking up, and I was like, I gotta go.
Started hustling?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good thing you did. Yeah, you never know. Holy cow. Because mm-hmm. you hear stories, like, one of my friends, I think it was Hansen, that, or Hans is what we called him. He was from Whitehall, and he's like... I'm hoping I'm telling the story about him, but he's like 6'6", really tall fella. And I want to say like they were coming off a fire and they were just getting ready to load up the pickups and maybe they're circled around doing like an after action review or something. And all of a sudden he just like hit the ground. So everyone's like, whoa, man, you all right? And what he said, it felt like two like giant humans grabbed him by the arm and just ripped him to the ground. And it was the lightning had traveled to the ground and went up through his leg and pulled him to the ground, but like stiffened up his one side kind of. And he said it wasn't even that close. I wasn't even that worried about it. I was like, whoa. Just never know with that how, you know, lightning travels.
Yeah, it's so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I heard that story my first year in fire, and because I knew him decently well, and he had just got done with fire when I came in. But I was always in the back of my brain, and then the story I was gonna say was with Great Northern, we're coming off this fire. And we were just coming off the night. We'd camp down lower, and then we'd hike up to the fire. It was in the McCallum Wilderness, I want to say it is, in Northern California, kind of by Tahoe. Really beautiful, but gnarly rocks and not a lot of places to, like, hide. And they were pretty exposed, like, even our camp. So we gathered around close enough, try not to be that close together in case a strike does come in, and had everyone squat down. And then me being the crew boss, I squatted down and had the radio on next to me, and I... did not want to have the radio on, but I wanted to hear if there was any traffic. And I think I might have turned it off when, like, the heart of the storm kind of sat over us. But it was, like, every bolt was on top of us, and it was so loud, and everything would, you know, that like blinding bright, like what happens. So I'm like, I'm dead. Oh no, I'm back. You know, because then like I could see again. Like, yeah. It happened for a little while too. I'd say, I mean, maybe 5-10 minutes, but it felt like eternity then. You know?
Yeah, I think, thunderstorms are just, they're so crazy.
Very cool though. I mean, yeah. I was very happy to survive that one, but also like, that was cool.
Yeah, they're kind of magical in a way, but like, they're like in one way they're like magical, but they're also so scary. So scary.
And then another beautiful thing about lightning is, one of my first lightning strike fires that I went to, well, at least that I can remember, was in like my second season, I think. So just single tree, I guess. My first single tree, I'll say, because I don't really remember exactly. But this LEO had been on quite a few fires, and he was right next to a house. And I'm not really sure why he was there, but he was there, and he was doing the investigation, I guess. And was digging around the base of the tree and kind of in between two roots. And he dug up these little glass balls. And I was like, whoa. I'm like, what is that? He's like, yeah, pretty much every lightning strike will cause some glass, depending on the soil, if it's like kind of a sandy, you know, consistency. And I think he gave me one, and I don't remember what happened to it, but it was really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Huh. I had no idea.
I was going to say, next time I'll have to dig underneath that pole.
See if there's something. Yeah, that would be so cool to have.
Yeah, I guess like in Oregon, kind of near the Deschutes, around the Deschutes National Forest, it's a little more sandy over there, so like, most lightning strike trees will have like an orb, I guess, pretty good size and like different colors, but it's really thin. So, a lot of times you're trying to get it, you might break it just trying to get it, but it's hard to transport it home, but it's, I guess you can get some cool colors out of the glass.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm always thinking about that when I go on. I mean, I don't respond to any fires anymore, but when I used to, every time a lightning strike, I'd be digging around.
Yeah.
I was probably getting too aggressive. So if there was one, I probably broke it.
Yeah, no, that's going to be me, though. Next summer, I'm going to be digging all over the peak if it hits.
That's probably what I was telling you, because hopefully you find one. That'd be super cool.
Yeah, I just have to be careful.
It'd be really, it brings bubble wrap with you or something.
Yeah.
Wrap that sucker up. So the book idea, did you already have that? Like, was that in your mind, like, going up here to write this book, or did it kind of come to you while you're there?
It kind of came while I was there. Like, I was journaling.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the first couple weeks, and then... I'm a creative writing student, so I was like, well, I might as well use this for my thesis.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just bubbled down from that.
Oh, cool. Are you at school right now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, at U of M?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, great campus.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to go there for a little bit. And then I guess we talked about it before, so I almost forgot to ask you this time. In one of our books, I can't remember which one it was, but do you recall when there's a lookout, and he's gonna be lookout for the first time, and he's pretty young, and the ranger is giving him like tips and stuff, talking to him, like, you know, what to do, things to do, and then gives him like tips on trying to keep from going crazy, because he said like some people love it, meant for this, and no problem. Then some people within 2 weeks go stir crazy and just don't want to be up here anymore. Did you experience anything like that, or?
Yeah, but I not right away. Oh, yeah. I think when I first went up, my mom told me to like stay purposeful.
Yeah.
And so I always kept myself busy, especially those first couple weeks. The lookout was pretty dirty. Like, there were fly spots all over the walls, and it needed cleaned up. So I stayed pretty busy, like organizing everything and getting to know like the landscape and practicing using the firefinder. But in September, when the smoke got really thick and I couldn't see anything, I think that's when I kind of got stir crazy. Because I was working, but I felt like I wasn't working because I couldn't really do my job.
Yeah.
Or an aspect of my job. And the wasps came out, and I didn't have screens on my lookout, and so like I was kind of like shut up in the, like, a glass box. Like, it was still, like, the sun would still shine through the smoke, so it would hit all the windows and
still heated up.
Yeah, and I had to keep everything closed to keep the wasps out, and I think that was when I was like, I'm going crazy.
I bet just in there baking.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But
that is tough.
Yeah.
And then did you do any cooking?
I cooked on the stovetop, but I never used the oven.
I was wondering, yeah.
Yeah, my mom was getting after me for that. She was like, you need to be better about what you're eating up there. You could buy a pizza, you know, and throw it in there.
Yeah, totally.
But I did cook like a lot of chicken and like hamburger, and I made a lot of like
kind of stir fry, like kind of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. But I think my favorite thing to eat was grilled cheese and tomato soup.
Yeah. Oh, it's a classic, right?
Yeah.
Especially in like a colder evening or something, or
a
colder day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I dig that too. Yeah, the reason I was asking is because in that same book, he was big on sourdough, so he kept making like bread and stuff.
Yeah. I know there's one lookout on the Payette, and she always bakes cookies for the repellers when they come and take her back haul out. And so, yeah, I'd like to become more of a baker up there next summer, but I first need to figure out how to get my oven started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it's different because it's like attached to the wood burner, like, is that what it is?
No, it's propane.
Oh, it's propane.
But there's like batteries going in, and you have to use a lighter to start it.
Yeah.
And I think most of the time, like, I could have figured it out if I wanted to, but it just felt like baking gets, you know, really hot, and it's pretty hot up there a lot of the time.
Yeah, I bet.
But on a cold day, it would be.
Yeah, kind of more on the shoulder, like beginning of the season, end of season, probably a little better. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, and it's tricky sometimes. Like the stove in this Airstream is, you know, it's a 65, so the oven's kind of older, and like the element fell off last year when I was going up to hunting camp. So me and my brother-in-law were like messing with it, and I couldn't get to light either. So I feel your pain.
Yeah,
I was like, well, we're cooking on top, but it's just as easy to get a cast iron and like put a lid on it and kind of use that to bake it, you know.
Yeah, because when you're up there, like. One thing that they didn't, like, really talk about in the lookout training course was, like, how everything works with, like, propane and stuff like that. So it was kind of, like, just learning when on the job.
Yeah.
You just have to do, I guess, what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and that's good. Like, what were we talking about before? You said, like resiliency, but use, like, a different word.
Hardy,
yeah, be hardy, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Also, maybe part of it's just being kind of lazy, like,
yeah,
you
it could
know.
Be, but you already got a challenge. I mean, your first year and a lot of new things, and then I feel like, and depends on the human, but, like, on me, I think I wonder if, like, I had too many new things stacked up, and, like, it might be a little overwhelming because it's, like, first time lookout, first time doing all these things, and then I'm trying to bake some sourdough and keep my damn sourdough alive, you know?
Yeah. It's just, a whole new world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I have time to probably start the sourdough a little bit more.
So yeah.
Maybe I would take better care of it, you know, say nicer things to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Does your mom bake? Is she a good cook?
Not really, but my dad is. So,
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think this is where I get it from. She's more like, I'm going to cook some mac and cheese and then just eat it straight out of the pot.
Yeah.
Like, I think I ate, like, mac and cheese a lot last summer.
Yeah, you're a college kid. That's a college kid diet. I mean, I was on that with the ramen and, whatever protein I could find to throw in there.
Yeah.
Because, especially up there and in college, like, running track. What was your track in cross country?
It was cross country, and then they got a track program, like, my last 2 years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So you got to do both then?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Did you do indoor track, too?
I did in high school, but not college.
Not college. Oh, gotcha. Because I think if you would have done indoor in college, you'd have been a three-sport athlete, because technically indoor and outdoor are two different sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't find out until, like, I don't know, my last year in track when I was running in college, I was like, oh, I'm a two-sport athlete, even though I'm doing the same sport.
Yeah.
But they're a little different events. You have, like, the 60-meter dash instead of the 100 and a few other, you know, like, there's, instead of the hammer, there's, like, the weight in indoor.
Okay.
It's like a little hammer kind of.
Interesting.
So a couple of differences, so I guess enough to make it a different sport.
Yeah, and you said you were a sprinter?
Yeah, a sprinter. Okay. Yeah, so a little easier life for me versus long distance, holy cow. I have the most respect in the world for long distance runners. My dad was one, my brother was one, and just doing some of the training. Like, we cross train with the long distance runners, and they come do some speed workout, and we do some of their long distance workouts, and holy cow, like, those long distance ones would about break me off. So it's like, the pain tolerance for the long distance is something I don't think a lot of people realize.
Yeah, I think gives you some mental toughness.
Yeah, that's for sure. Absolutely. And you know, you don't always feel 100%, so being able to get off the couch, get your shoes on, and go hammer out a long, you know, I don't know, 10 mile or 8 mile or whatever it might be, you know, and also, like, just do it, because it's not like something you can do, like, a sprint's over really fast.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Like, if you're really fast, 10 seconds, 100 meter dash, you know, like, for college, you know, it's pretty fast. But yeah, for long distance, you know, like, I think, I'm trying to think how long it took me to run a half marathon. Like, 1 hour and 40 minutes.
Is that's good.
Yeah. Is that, yeah, maybe it's a little slower than that. Maybe it's, but somewhere in that ballpark,
yeah.
You know, and I just ran that trail, you know, along Florence.
Uh-huh.
I ran from Lolo to Florence. I just think of mileage on there. Or maybe I ran down to Florence and back. I can't remember if it's 6 miles or whatever, but I ended up doing like an out and back.
Nice.
And I wasn't going to really do it, but then I was like, was it 13 point something's a half marathon?
Yeah,
.1. Yeah. So I was like, at the time I knew that. So I was like watching my watch and I was like, going to end at 13. I'm like, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
So I get that 13.1, you know.
Yeah, and I think long distance running really helps, like, with anything in the world of fire.
Yes.
Like my old foreman used to say, like, when we were digging line, he'd be like, "This is a marathon, not a sprint."
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think just learning how to, like, slow down but still kind of give, like, consistent effort.
Yeah, yeah. Something that's maintainable.
Yeah.
It took me a while to learn that. I thought that bird was coming in here. Do you see him?
Oh, maybe out the corner.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, holy. Yeah, he looked like he threatened to come in, and then he landed on the door, so. Yeah.
Cute.
Yeah, I don't mind if he's up there.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
You see him? Yeah.
Oh.
He likes us. He's really close.
Is that a meadowlark?
I think so, actually. I don't know my birds too well, but yeah, I would say kind of colorful.
Yeah.
Nice pattern to it. Yeah, and even like track, college track, a lot of the hard things I've done, like you said, is a lot of that, like, long distance mentality of, like, you find that gear that you can do all day long, and you just lock it in, because especially being a bit of a meathead, I would try to hammer, and I almost washed on rookie training, because I came in trying to be like the best smoke jumper to ever do rookie training, and for some weird reason. And yeah, about wash day one, because I was cramping up and having a lot of issues that first day, and then I realized, like, all right, like, the marathon, not a sprint mentality.
Yeah, it's a learning curve, but
painful, especially for me. But yeah, you get there, you know, and like long distance running, I think, definitely helps folks kind of learn it in I don't know, a growing kind of way, because, you know, when you first start running, did you have this where you kind of start in lower mileage and you work your way up to, like, a 10-miler or more?
Yeah. And I probably didn't really start doing, like, long runs like that until college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. And then that kind of group suffering when you're at practice, and, like, everyone's doing it together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that makes it easier for me, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, yeah, just kind of carries you forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done a marathon, half marathon?
Yeah. I've ran like 4 or 5 marathons.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. Like recently, like last 5 years, like one a year. What?
Probably like one a year.
One a year.
But I'm starting to get into trail running more now.
Yeah. Trail's nice because you get to see a little more scenery, huh?
Yeah. And, like, with marathon running, I was always really obsessed with my pace.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, like, it gets stressful, but, like, with trail running, like, if I want to stop and admire the view or, like, eat some fruit snacks, like, I don't feel any pressure with it. Like, it's more just kind of, like, you're getting the exercise, but it's also, like, you're out in nature.
Yeah.
Having a good time.
Totally, yeah, kind of a dual purpose versus, yeah, like, the marathon stuff, especially because it, I mean, imagine most marathons you've done, probably a mob of people, and you're trying to get most of your PR, but, you know, your personal record, but also there's the competition of people around you, so
yeah.
That happened after my rookie year. I was still in pretty good shape, so one of my really good friends, he was going to run the turkey trot in Bozeman, They might call it like huffing for stuffing or something different, but you know, turkey trot. Yeah. You know, we just did the 5K thing. And if you beat the turkey, you get like a coffee mug or something. Oh. And the way that one used to be, the course, the 10K would leave earlier, but then it would do a bigger loop and loop back into the 5K. And each like age group, I think, had a turkey, you know, and the turkey was like a fast runner. It was a runner, you know, and I saw the turkey from the 10K, and at the time I think I was already beating the 5K turkey, and the 10K turkey was in really good shape, and they're dressed up as a turkey in turkey costume, you know, and so I see that 10K turkey, and I'm like, I think I got this.
Yeah.
and I really didn't, like, I was in horrible shape. I mean, I was in decent shape, but I wasn't in like long distance runner shape, you know.
Yeah.
And I got him barely.
Yeah. It's, got your mug.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I forgot to get the mug because I'm just like dying afterwards.
Yeah.
It finishes right by the museum, or used to, and there's a jackleg fence there, and I just went like hung on the jackleg fence and like did my best not to throw up as I was going over the finish line because there was like families and stuff there, and oh man, I was dying. But yeah, I got that turkey. That's all I was shooting for.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to. I was going to go out for just a nice little run before a big Thanksgiving meal. You know, so that was my plan, and then. You know, my competitive nature took over, my competitive side. When I saw that turkey, I was like, I think I can get this.
Yeah.
And even then, at the beginning, I was like, we'll see. You know, and I started reeling him in. And I was like, oh, I got him. You know, and then I had like 200 meters left, and I, you know, gave it all I got. And, it was worth it. But but it made me work harder than I wanted to.
Yeah, because you can be proud of beating that turkey the rest of your life.
Yeah, I wish I had a damn mug to show for it, though. I forgot to grab it.
Yeah, that is a bummer.
Yeah, but it was such a cool event, you know. I really like the idea of going out, and you see, like, a lot of families show up, you know, and they do, like, the family run before, like, my uncle and his kiddos do it, and his wife, you know, like, they all go do a Thanksgiving run before Thanksgiving, and I really like that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's good to have something that, I don't know, you can all enjoy.
Yeah, kind of, earn that Thanksgiving a little bit, you know, work up an appetite.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, now I can have 3 slices of pie.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, if your family's like mine, someone's always bringing pie. Like, you'd be like, you don't bring anything. And then, you know, another pumpkin pie or something shows up, you know, and apple pie. That's a good time.
Yeah.
So back to Lookout stuff. So you're going back to Lookout this summer?
Yeah.
Awesome.
My start date is June 15th.
Oh, you got a little time.
Yeah, but I'm ready. Like, I'm ready to just pack up and go right now.
That's cool. So, like, when you left, were you ready to leave, or were you, like ready to get back into civilization a little bit, I guess, like the first year?
Yeah, I was. Well, while I was up there, I was like, okay, like, I've had a great summer. I miss, like, having running water and electricity and, like, my comfy bed.
Yeah.
And so I was ready to come back. But then as soon as I got back, it probably took me like a month to like readjust to like living in civilization again.
Totally.
Yeah, it was really strange. Like, I would just sit in a coffee shop, and like even the sound of like the espresso machine was like kind of like disalarming in a way. Like, or unsettling.
Totally.
Yeah, just like there's too much stimulation.
That's, I was trying to think of the word to like throw in there.
Yeah. Oh, overstimulation.
Overstimulation.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can relate because a little bit, not quite as much because yours was probably more extreme, but I think it was in 2015. I spent about 3 months in Alaska, and most of it was out in McGrath, which is, you know, a tiny little place out in kind of the middle of nowhere, Alaska. And then a lot of it was like at a cabin protection, just me and one of my really good buddies from high school, actually. And he was jumping on a call, John Olivia, shout out. But yeah, there's nothing, right? Like, we brewed our own coffee, and like the coffee, you know, like the paint looking paint can cook cans that you get as a jumper. And, you know, it's kind of sludgy and rough, but you know, it works, and, not a lot going on. You know, we sent sprinklers and made sure the cabin was in good shape, but not a lot of input from the outside world because you're out in the middle of nowhere. And coming back, and especially like flying into Missoula, just like, oh man,
yeah,
it's a lot. Everyone's in a hurry, it feels like, even though it's Missoula and people really aren't compared to other places, but like probably your situation too, it's like you're not in those crowds and around a lot of people that are trying to get somewhere.
Yeah I even felt that way like when I worked on the West Fork fire crew, and like I stayed in the bunkhouse for the summer. Like, I think there was a month where I didn't come into Missoula at all. And even then, like, I just felt like whoa, it's like life is busy.
Yeah, West Fork's no cell phone service, right? And yeah. It's kind of out there.
Yeah, and just like you're living with like the same three people that you go to work with the next day. So yeah. You're just not getting a ton of like stuff that's different.
Yeah. A lot of other, like I said, input from the outside world, yeah. You know, like the cars and I mean, everything really, and smells, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's how fire crews end up being so close. And like you hear the family word passed along and around in fire because it, I mean, it really is. You spend all the 24 hours a day with these people sometimes, you know, you get to know each other really well.
Yeah. Like I think there was, one summer that they did like a throw together crew and we went to Canada from the Bitterroot. And like, I think it was only me and one other West Fork person went, but by the end of like, I think we're gone for 2 weeks. Like I felt like I knew everyone so well and like,
get some inside jokes going on and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so sad to leave them. Like
it is.
Yeah. The end.
Yeah. I mean, it feels, cause you spend every like waking minute and sleeping minute with these people. And, yeah, when you leave, it's like, oh man, miss that already.
Yeah.
You know? Was Seth on that crew?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I think he was in charge.
Oh really? Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. I think he's crew boss. Yeah.
Yes,
that's the man.
Yeah. And then the other West Fork person who went was the trainee, the crew boss trainee.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but I saw Seth just like released a new song.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
that's so cool.
Yeah, friends. Yeah, he's gonna come on the podcast and do a little promoting. But
cool.
Yeah, I think he's on a burn mod down in somewhere in the southeast, like Kentucky or Tennessee or something. So
nice.
Yeah. So after he gets back, he's gonna come in and do like a little preview of the song. Have you heard it yet?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's good, huh?
Yeah.
It's cool because it's you know, it's about fighting fire and you know, being on a fire crew for the Forest Service, and so it kind of brings back the warm fuzzies when you hear it.
Yeah. And Seth is so awesome and funny, so it's like, it's just cool when someone you know is doing great things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's and especially like the family nature of things, you're like, oh yeah, like I know that guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Did you do coffee when you're up there? Last question.
At the lookout?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Every morning.
How'd you do your coffee?
I had a French press, so I would just boil the water on the stove and then pour it in, and it would make like 3 to 4 cups, and I'd drink them all.
Yeah, except for the day, or do you have to afternoon pick me up?
I would only, if there was an afternoon storm, I would. But other than that, I tried not to, because coffee will keep me up all night.
Yeah, same. Like, it's kind of late for me to have coffee, but, you know, working all day is kind of needing a little pick-me-up for this. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I think I had a cup at, like, 5.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Will that get you to a little bit?
Yeah.
Same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, I think it's, like, anything after, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it'll be a little harder to get to sleep unless I do something, like, really active.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Sauna. Sauna kind of helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on days, like, I have to drink coffee in the afternoon, I'll pop some melatonin, which isn't the best combination, but it gets me through the day.
Yeah, totally good. Yeah, and because otherwise you end up kind of getting a cycle, you know, at least for me, like if I don't get to sleep, then I might drink a little more coffee the next day to try to balance it out, and then end up drinking maybe later on, and I get in the cycle of drinking coffee too late, not getting good sleep. So
yeah,
if you can kind of reset, and usually the weekend kind of brings me back to the reset if I get on a kick like that. Well, awesome. Yeah, it's just a question I had because coffee's a big staple of the fire world. So.
Oh, yeah. It's a must.
Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. Well, Grace, thanks for coming on. And we'll have to do another one, especially, you know, after this season, this coming up season, and see how your book's coming along and stuff.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
Have a great
time. Thanks, Grace.
Yeah,
anytime. And thanks, folks, for tuning in.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.